at the springs of Orlu. She had been wearing the undyed clothing for 5 years. Her name was Atsevin. She left her house in Chukalmas to bring water from the springs of Orlu for the water dance. She had been up to those springs with people of her Heimas, but not alone before. When she came across the ridge at the head of the canyon, she listened for the sound of water running. The scrub oak and thorn bush had grown thick, and there was no human path. She crouched down and followed deer paths and came out on a big boulder of red rock that stuck out from the wall of the canyon like a porch. From there she looked down to the spring. She saw a deer drinking and saw a man drinking. He was crouched down drinking from the surface of the water where it welled over the lip of the spring. He wore no clothing, and his hair and skin were the color of a deer. He had not seen or heard her come out onto the rock. After he had drunk his fill, he raised his head and spoke to the spring. She saw his lips make the Heya Wakwana, though she did not hear his voice. He looked up then and saw the girl on the rock in the canyon wall. They looked at each other across the spring, across the air. The man's eyes were the eyes of deer. He did not speak, nor did Atsevin. He looked down, moved back from the spring, turned, and went into the thick underbrush along the bank of Orlu Creek. The big alders growing there hid him from sight at once. She could hear no sound of his going. She sat a long time on the boulder ledge watching the spring run. In the heat of late summer no birds spoke. She went down to the spring and sang to it, took up water in the blue clay jar, slung the jar in the carrier, and went back as she had come, scrambling up the steep canyon wall. When she was on the big rock above the spring, she turned back and spoke. "We are dancing the water in Chukalmas tomorrow." Then she went on up the deer trails and across the ridge. When she had brought the water of Orlu to the Heimas for the Wakwa the next day, she went home to her hearth in Cat's Whiskers' house. There she asked her grandmother's brother, a woman-living man, a teacher of the blue clay, "Did I see a person from the second house or from the eighth house at Orlu Springs?" He asked, "How did this person look?" "Like a deer, like a man." Her uncle said, "Well, maybe you saw a sky person. This is a sacred time, and you are doing a sacred thing. How did this person speak?"
"He spoke to the water after he drank."
"Did he speak to you?"
"No, I spoke to him. I said that we are dancing the water."
"Maybe this person will come to the dancing," her uncle said.
Atsevin looked towards the hunting side, towards the paths from the north, all the time of the dancing in the dancing place the next day, but she did not see the man from Orlu Springs. He had come, but he was afraid to come into the town, into the dancing place. It was too long since he had been with human people. He did not know how to come among them. Afraid, he hid under the creek bank and watched the dancing. Dogs came barking and snarling at him, and he fled away, running up the stream bed into the hills. After the dance, the heat became still greater, and nothing moved all afternoon at Chukalmas except the buzzards over Buzzard Hill. On such a day, Atsevin went back up the canyons and ridges to the springs of Orlu. She found the deer trails that led down to the big rock and came there. The spring had ceased to run. No one was there. On the rock were 4 green acorns of the live oak. A squirrel or another person might have put them there. Atsevin took them and put in their place what she had brought with her, a stick of olive wood carved in a spiral and polished smooth as a heholeno. Not speaking loudly or looking down into the canyon, she said, "I will be going on the salt journey. After that I will come back." She went on home then to Chukalmas. After the salt journey, before the wine, she came to the rock in Orlu Canyon. The heholeno was gone. Nothing was there. Whatever was there, the squirrels, the jays, or the wood rats might have moved it or taken it. She found an obsidian chip in the dirt of the canyon wall, and with it made the blue clay mark, scratching it into the skin of the red boulder. When she was done, she stood up and said, "They will be dancing the wine in our town soon." The man who had lost his name was listening down in the canyon under the dry creek bank. He was always listening. When Atsevin went home that evening, her uncle said to her, "Listen, Atsevin,
I have been talking with some hunters who go up the canyons there above the petrified forest and over the Hawk Ridge. They know of this deer man. He left 45 Redwood's house here a long time ago to live in the forest. He used to be a serpentine man, but he has gone outside the houses, they say. He got lost. Lost people are dangerous. They do things without meaning. Probably it would be better if you didn't go back to Orlu Canyon. You may be frightening him going there. She said, do the hunters know where he lives in the hills? He has no house at all, her uncle said. Atseven had no wish to worry her uncle, but she had no fear of the man in Orlu Canyon, and did not understand how it might be that she would frighten him. So she waited till her uncle was busy with the harvest, and went back on the northward paths. It had not yet rained, but the trees were releasing their water held in trunk and root, and the spring had some water in it lying deep among the rocks. The dirt around the spring was muddy and deer-trampled. In the skin of the red boulder there was a mark cut beside the blue clay sign she had made. It was the coyote eye of the eighth house. Seeing it, she said, "Heya, heya, coyote, so you are here, dweller in the wild house. This gift is for anybody in that house who might like it." She set down what she had brought, some grape leaves stuffed with soaked barley, raisins, and coriander, and then went away as she had come. When she and her uncle were together after work, a while later, she said, "Matai kebi, maternal uncle woman dear. The man says that he lives in the house of the wilderness. I don't think you need to be afraid of him, or for me, if I go there." "What if I went there and smelled the air?" her uncle said. Atseven said, "The doors of that house do not close." So her uncle went to Orlu Canyon. He saw the marks on the boulder, and beside them he saw a hematite rock from the stream bed, polished, red, beautiful. He did not pick it up. He sat a long time on that rock shelf, thinking and listening. He did not see the lost man or hear him, but he thought he was there, near the alders across the spring. He sang Heya Wakwana and went back to Chuckalmas. He said to his niece, "I think the air there is good. The creek is beginning to run now. A rock from the creek is there." When Atseven went back, she took the rock and left a string bag she had woven. She said, "They will be dancing the grass soon in our town. All the people of the wilderness are welcome in that dancing." She saw him watching her then, listening to her. He was behind a six-trunked madrone across the canyon, and she could see his shoulder, his hair, and his eyes. He crouched down when he thought that she had seen him. She looked away, and turned away, and went back up the ridge. So, from Wakwa to Wakwa, from season to season, she would go back to the springs of Orlu with some small gift. She would speak, telling the lost man about the dancing in Chuckalmas. And she would take his gift, if he had put one there on the red rock, and sometimes she saw him. Always he saw her. When an old woman of the Serpentine, who lived in 45 Redwood's house, was dying, Atseven went to Orlu and spoke of that, thinking that the woman might have been kin to the lost man, and that he might want to sing the Going Westward songs for her, if he had not forgotten them. On the first day of a world dance, she came in the heavy rain to Orlu Canyon. The creek was roaring and foaming yellow in spate, and the birds of the canyon were sheltering and crouching in every shrub and tree. It was hard to get down the canyon wall to the red rock, as the mud slipped away underfoot. In the noise of the rain falling and the creek beating its rocks against each other, she said, "We are dancing the world in our town, as people are dancing it in the wilderness. Tomorrow is the wedding night. A man of the first house and I will be married then." In the noise of the rain she did not know if he was there, or if he could hear her voice. That year Atseven did not want to dance the moon, being newly married. She and her husband came away from town, up into the hills, and made a summer house of 9 poles on the ridge above Shalyo Canyon. One day she went over to Orlu from there. She came over the ridge in a clear place where a digger pine had fallen, and looked down the canyon head to the spring and the red rock above it. She saw the lost man sleeping on the rock. He lay face down with his cheek on the carved marks in the rock. She stood still a long time and went away without waking him. When she came back to the summer house, the young husband asked her, "Where did you go?" "To the springs of Orlu," she said.
He had heard talk in the Bay Laurel Lodge about the forest-living man who had gone wild and was seen in Orlu Canyon. He said, "Never go there." "Yes," she said, "I will go there." "Why?" he said. She said, "Ask my uncle why I go to Orlu. He can tell you, maybe. I cannot." The young man said, "If you go there again, I will go with you." She said, "Please let me go alone. There is nothing to fear." After that, her husband was uneasy living there far up in the hills. He said, "Let's move down to your family's summer place." And she agreed. While they were there at White Ash Banks, the husband talked to Adseven's uncle and to some hunters who often went up in the canyons. He did not like what they told him about the lost man. They said that when they went to Orlu, he was always there near the spring. But the uncle said, "I think it is all right." Adseven went down to Chuckalmas to dance the water. It was she who brought the water from the spring at Orlu. And after that, she would go back alone to Orlu before the great festivals. Sometimes she took food. Her husband watched this and said nothing, telling himself what the uncle had told him. A boy made Adseven and her husband his parents along about the time of the water, and after he had been living a few months in the time of the new grass, Adseven took him in the carrier and set off on the northern paths. She had said nothing to her husband. He saw her go with the baby and was alarmed and angry. He followed her at a distance up into the hills, up the canyons, across the high ridge to Orlu. On the ridgeback, he lost her trail. There was no trail. He could not see where she had gone, and there was no sound of her going. He was afraid to make noise looking for her, and stood still, listening. He heard her voice below him, down in the canyon over the creek bed. She said, "This is my son. I have named him Following Coyote." Then she said nothing for a while. Then he heard her voice again. "Have you gone away, Coyote?" Then for a while she was silent, and then her voice cried out loudly, without words. The young man sprang forward, pushing and tearing through the brush to the edge of the canyon and down the canyon wall to the place where he had heard her voice. She was sitting on the red rock ledge with the baby in her arms, weeping. As he came there, the husband smelled death. When he stood by her, she pointed down towards the spring. The lost man had died, lying under the big alders across the creek just below the spring. He was already part earth.